Everyone, and welcome to minute 26 of season 4 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Alan Sanders of The Wilder Ride. Welcome back to the show this season, Alan.
Hey, buddy. So happy to be back again with you, and it's a brand new year, so I guess it's a brand new flick for you.
Well, no, I did 3 movies during 2022. So, you know, it's not a question of.
You're crazy.
I might be crazy, but, you know, I have fun doing this. And hopefully everyone who's listening enjoys it also. And I know my guests have a fun time, too. So, you know.
There's no doubt about that. I have always enjoyed being on with you. So thank you for having
me. There you go. So I'm crazy, but, you know, I'm fun crazy, I guess you can say.
Yeah. Fun crazy.
The fact that people are willing to come back and be on the show means that they enjoyed it the first time or the second time or the third time. You know, this is your fourth season that you're on of my show. And what is this? Your fifth time that we're, you know, recording together because you stepped up last month, last season also. So, mm-hmm. You know, I can't complain about that.
You mentioned hot crazy. Have you ever seen the guy that did the little graph chart about women and you put them on the scale of hotness and then craziness, and the further across on the hotness and the craziness, you're trying to find the ultimate, like just hot enough to still be marriage material, but not too crazy. And he goes like, and if you find a perfect 10 who's not crazy, that's a dude. If you've not seen it, it's a guy that's dressed up like a 60s almost college professor. And it's the funniest little video on how do you rank the hotness / craziness of women. If you have not seen it, check it out.
Okay, I will try to find it and post it, you know, in the discussion group so people can actually see it. So we shall check. We shall wait and see how that works. So minute 26 begins with Sally responding to Marie's offer and ends with a wave beginning. So we ended things on Friday. Sally is sitting in a outdoor cafe with her two friends, and they're talking about things. And, you know, her friend Marie, Carrie Fisher, aka Princess Leia, decides that this is the time for her to, you know, get back on the wagon and start dating again, even now that she's no longer with Joe. So the minute starts off with her saying, Ken Darman. You know, we heard a little bit of that on Friday, but, you know, we didn't go into that much. So what do you know about the name Ken?
Well, I both good and bad. My father-in-law, who passed away about a year ago now, here early January of last year, he was named Ken, and his firstborn was Ken, but not Junior. So I always have in my phone not just Ken / or in parentheses dad, but I've got my brother-in-law Ken, which is a guy who we've done a lot of stuff with. But beyond that, it's just been a name. I never really thought a whole lot about Ken.
Do you know the origin of the name Ken? Like from what background it comes from?
Well, you know what? I don't know. So I'm going to take a guess, and I'm just going to go. It sounds maybe from the UK.
Okay. It's a little cheating, but okay. It's Scottish.
Okay. Well, there we go. I'm technically
no, I know,
right.
But if you say the UK,
I get 4 countries in one.
Exactly. That's my point. You cheated a little bit, but that's fine. It's originally a Scottish name. Okay. Sometimes it is the actual name, and sometimes it is a shortened version of another name. And there are a whole bunch of them. Could be Kenneth, Keenan, Kendrick, Kendall, Kennedy, Mackenzie, Kenson, or Kenelm. I've never even heard of that one. Kenelm. Huh. Never heard that either. Yeah, your father-in-law and brother-in-law, are they Kenneths or are they just Ken?
Yeah, the formal, I believe their birth name would be Kenneth, but right. They all went by Ken.
Okay, no.
They both went.
Right. It's also a Japanese name that can have many different types of meanings that it could be. So one of the most famous named Kens is someone named Kenneth Sean Carson. Do you know who that is?
Mm-mm. No, I do not.
Okay, if I were to tell you who is the most famous Ken, what would your response be?
My first thought went to Kenneth Branagh.
Okay. But No. So we're talking about,
see, now,
we're talking about
see,
Barbie's
I know
Ken.
how you play these games.
I know. We're talking about Barbie's Ken.
Oh, that Ken? I never thought about that because I never had well, I had daughters, but they didn't play with Barbies so much, so we never had the Ken dolls.
Right.
But
Okay.
now that you say it, I think about it.
Right. So his official name is Kenneth Sean Carson.
I had
Okay.
no idea he had a middle or last name, by the way.
That is correct. Neither did I till I did the research here. Okay. He debuted in 1961 as the counterpart for Barbie. He was invented by a man named Elliot Handler. Okay, Barbie had been introduced 2 years earlier, and they decided that they needed someone, to for Barbie to be with, you know. So they the original inventor of Barbie is a woman named Ruth Handler. So basically, it was her son. It was named after her son, Kenneth Handler. The actual Ken Handler passed away in 1994. Okay, but they decided to use the first name Kenneth based on that. Okay, just like Barbie was named after her daughter. You know, she had a daughter named I guess Barbara that they called it. So he's presumed to be from a place called Willows, Wisconsin, which is also where Barbie is from. Okay, and basically he has held over 40 different occupations over the 60 years that this doll has been around. The most recent one being that he was a marine biologist.
Okay.
Did you know that they even had Barbie and Ken break up at some point over the years?
Once again, having had four daughters, you'd think I'd be up on the Barbie
I
Ken
didn't, again,
lore,
I
but
don't know these things either, but
they never got into those dolls. They were into like Polly Pockets and some of the other things, but for whatever reason. So yeah, I never knew anything about the backstory of Barbie. I didn't even know she had a backstory. I knew she had a house, I knew she had a Corvette, but
right.
that's about it.
Okay. All right. That's fair. So in 2004, they actually announced that Barbie and Ken were splitting up. They basically had this whole campaign that their Hollywood romance has come to an end, but that they would still remain friends and things like that. And they became platonic, friends over the next 5 years, basically. And then they had a they launched a campaign in 2011 that Ken was trying to win back Barbie's affections, and they reunited in 2011. You know, it's completely nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just going to go through some of the various occupations that he's had. I mean, this is all in alphabetical order, so I can't say in chronological order, but it's at least in alphabetical. So he's been an astronaut, a banker, a barista, a baseball player, a basketball player, a boxer, businessman, cameraman, coach, country western singer, cowboy, dancer, dentist, doctor, dog trainer, drum major. Should I keep going, or is this enough for you?
Now, do you know from your research, do they have a version of the doll with like a costume or you
Yes,
could buy those outfits?
yes, yes, yes.
Every one of those could have been an outfit for your Ken doll.
Yes, they had an Olympic swimmer, Ken. They had a pizza chef,
Wasn't that just
Ken.
taking all of his clothes off?
Maybe. It
Olympic
didn't say
swimmer
porno
Ken.
pizza chef. It just said a pizza chef. You know,
Oh.
or were you talking about the Olympic swimmer? I don't know
I'm
which.
talking about the Olympic
Oh,
swimmer.
okay. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the pizza guy. I thought you were talking about the pizza guy. You know.
You go to buy the bubble wrap and there's like nothing in there. It's like, here you go.
Well, they actually do have one. They had a Ken that they debuted in 2009 called Sugar Daddy Ken.
No.
Yes.
Was he a little bit older, had kind of a grayish beard, but gold chains?
It was aimed for adult collectors. Okay,
Working on his fourth wife.
the line actually debuted in 2010, and it obviously for obvious reasons it was very controversial. Because of the suggestive sounding name. So Ken had a more mature appearance and had his own little puppy that he came with it. And
We gotta attract the young ladies with something.
right. And Mattel actually defended and said that the name of the puppy was Sugar, and that's why he was known as a Sugar Daddy. But
That is justifying it and trying to find a loophole. That is such a crock of shit.
Completely.
There's absolutely no way you go calling a Ken doll sugar daddy without knowing exactly what you're doing.
Who's the idiot who thought of that idea? Hey, I've got a great idea. Let's make Pimp Ken sugar daddy.
Well, you know that you heard about the there are adult toy lines or for adult collectors, but did you hear? I think Toys R Us got in trouble because they were carrying the Breaking Bad collector's dolls, and the main guy comes with like the aqua blue colored methamphetamine as the stuff that he was cooking, and they're like, "You've got a Breaking Bad doll on the store shelves of Toys R Us selling methamphetamine."
Oh my God!
Not exactly a good influence for kids.
No, I don't think so. So it, back to When Harry Met Sally. The name of the person is Ken Darman. Have you ever heard the last name Darman before?
Darman? It doesn't sound unfamiliar, but I don't know anybody by that name personally.
So it is most commonly a name found in Indonesia. Okay. And basically, it's one in 746,828 people have the last name Darman. Okay, that's one in three quarters of a million people. Okay, there are 52,434th most common family name around the globe. Okay. It's also a first name. It's the 22,185th most popular name that people have. There are over 40,000 people who have the first name Darman. I mean, this is just crazy. I can't say I know 40,000 people, but I've never heard the name Darman either as a first or last name.
I'm trying to figure out what's crazier, the fact that somebody actually took the time to tabulate and collate these lists, or that you actually looked them up.
Well, I'm here to give off information. That's what I'm here for, to teach you about things that you never would have thought of doing before.
You excel like nobody else I know in this area. Your field of expertise has become useless trivia.
That's right. It's always been that way. You know. So what can you do? Some of us haven't, and some of us don't. I don't know where I fit into with that, but that's besides the point. So then the response that Marie gets after she says Ken Darman, Sally is shocked by this answer because she goes, "He's been married for over a year." And then Marie goes, "Really? Married?" And then she takes the little index card, you know, what she took out of the Rolodex, and like folds the corner over to make it dog-eared. You know, basically saying, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to save this one because maybe he won't be married at some point, but now he is."
Or, and I got the sense that she's one of those people who's like, "Oh, well, married guys, they're fun to play with without having to worry about a commitment."
Well, that's what we know about Marie. Marie is in a relationship with a married guy who just won't leave his wife. So,
right.
You know, that's what she's.
By the way, I was going to, my first note I actually started with this scene, which I didn't know you were going to bypass, and maybe you already talked about, and that's why, because this scene already was playing out before I came on. Do you think the average millennial or Gen Z that listens to the show will even know what a Rolodex is, let alone know that was a Rolodex card?
Well, we did discuss Rolodexes on Friday, but we didn't go into that question, and I'm assuming the answer to that is no. They will not know.
Because I'm wondering, what would somebody, like, if I showed even my daughters who are in the Gen Z crowd, if I said, "Okay, pause, what kind of card is that?" I don't think they would know.
Right.
They would like, "Oh, I don't know why it's got holes in the bottom." Like, they wouldn't, like you called it an index card at first, and I thought, "But that's not an index card. That's a Rolodex
card." That's right. I misspoke when I called it an index card. Index cards come up later in the movie.
It made me wonder, you know, when movies age to a certain point, do certain, like, what ages out that where an audience that's younger would go back and watch it? They may like the movie. It's a really, actually, it's time, it's I would say timeless in terms of content, because let's face it, relationships are something we've all been battling since humans decided to get together with more than one person in a cave. Sure. But I'm just curious when things start to fall off and they go, I don't know what that means, or I don't know what that reference is, or wait a minute, you couldn't take your phone off the wall? You know,
right.
Questions like that I think are funny.
That's right. No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think I mentioned this on Friday that on the commentary, there are two commentaries on the copy of the movie that I have, and one of them is just Rob Reiner, and the other one is Rob Reiner, Nora Ephron, and Billy Crystal, which is a really fun commentary to listen to, obviously. But it's mentioned here that, you know, nowadays, you know, you basically have everything on your cell phone. You know, you don't even need any of these things.
Right.
You know, so, but you're right. It's the fact that she's using a Rolodex card, you know, is somewhat outdated, you know, when looking at it from 2023, you know, going backwards and saying, oh, you know, this is the way things were 34 years ago. So
I do love the fact that I have to wonder, are these just all professional contacts or are these just all the men, period?
I have a feeling this is just her list of, maybe she's like a matchmaker.
Right. She's definitely trying to play that here. I mean, it's a stereotypical moment. We've seen this on sitcoms and other shows. Usually it's a motherly type, sure, or a mom that's trying to hook you up. But it's so funny that, like, she's got her Rolodex of potential available guys.
Right, but what's ironic about it is that, you know, she sees herself that she's, you know, in a relationship, so she doesn't need it. You know, you said, right, it's usually the motherly figure. So for her, it's like, all right, I already found someone because he's going to leave his wife any day, like he's been promising me for, you know, the last 5 years or whatever it is. But, you know, let's help someone else, you know, that type of thing. I mean, I don't know if you caught it last week when Sally mentions that she and Joe broke up. So her friend Alice says, what? And then Marie goes, Joe's available? Yeah. You know?
Yeah, the writing here, it's obviously you got to pay attention. It's pretty quick. There's a lot of dialogue, yes, which is good for the kind of this era of rom-com. This is my area. Like, this is my kind of rom-com formula. I kind of got ticked off in the 2000s when they started to try to change the formula. Right. And I've railed about this on the radio before, where I'm like, the rom-com is a very basic formula. Don't mess it up. It's boy meets girl, boy does something stupid, boy loses girl, boy has to get girl back. The end, boy gets girl back. You know, I mean, follow the formula. Right. Don't you can throw in maybe an extra friend or maybe a little subplot, but don't mess up the formula. And then they tried doing that in the 2000s. Like, well, we always know that this happens, so we're going to try. No, there's a reason why rom-coms work. And you've got it's like a fairy tale. Fairy tales have to start off with once upon a time, right? You don't break that formula.
Correct. No, I completely agree with you on that. So she dog ears, you know, the Rolodex card. So where do you think the term dog ear comes from?
You
have dogs. I know.
I have dogs. Right. So there's certain ears, like you've got the pointy ears, but you've got some dogs that the ears will fold over depending on whether they're excited or not. They'll fold over. And so they'll fold down like a dog.
Right. But not when you're looking for Ken Dorman, you know, that type of thing. But
no.
So the phrase actually dates back to at least the 17th century. I mean, that's just mind-boggling that's been, you know, over 400 years, 450 years that people have been using the term. I mean, it's basically a dog ear is a folded-down corner of a book page, and the name refers to the ears of many breeds of domestic dogs that flap over, like you just mentioned. Okay, it can serve as a bookmark. It is also commonly used to mark a section or phrase of a book that one finds to be important or of personal meaning. Other names for this practice includes page folding and corner turning. The practice is generally frowned upon by those who want to preserve books in their original condition. It is also sometimes used to keep sheets of paper together in the absence of a stapler or paper clip. Okay. So do you dog ear pages?
No. In fact, even with my paperbacks, I am so careful as a reader. I actually will just barely pull it open enough to read so I don't even break the spine.
I'm exactly like that too. I hate reading a book where the pages are starting to fall out or that the pages – or people have written in them or people have folded the corners of the pages. That's what a freaking bookmark is for. You have a bookmark, you put it in.
Right. Now, if it's a textbook, if it's something that I'm doing research on, then I may have things turned down to kind of go back to certain sections or highlight it. Many of my textbooks that I saved from college, I highlighted to have passages that I wanted to study, but that's different.
No, and nowadays you also have the adhesive, you know, tabs that you can put in books and stuff like that. You know, if you want to save something to
sign here.
Exactly. But, you know, you use that. I use that in books also. Sometimes I'll, you know, want to save a certain place and there's, you know, put the adhesive tab on there and there you go. Right? It's easier to find, you know, that type of thing. So it's, you know, sometimes people just use the tip of the page and sometimes use half of the page, which is even crazier that someone would really ruin a book that way.
No, I, my wife and I are the exact same way. The only thing that's she used to do in, and depending whether we get into this when we get into any relationship talk, but we're both products of previous marriages. One of the things they would do with their books, especially with their hardbacks, if they ever loaned one of their hardbacks to somebody, they had a rule because they wanted to know who's also read the book. So
they would write all the names.
Not on the they would say, okay, you need to sign your name and date it when you finish reading it, when you return it. So that way they could go back and go, oh yeah, we loaned it to so-and-so. They read it on this. So it was like their little tradition, but we don't.
My mother does that actually with her book. She like lends out books to friends and they always write their name in it. So this way, you know, my mother, you know, is in her early 80s. So for her, you know, this way she can actually remember who she's given the book to. Yeah. It's
I mean,
it's kind of cool. Even though my mother a lot of times will read a book and she'll say, I've read this before. I remember this.
She should have put there her name in it.
She does it with movies too. You know, so.
Well, I don't mind watching the same movie twice. I like it.
Neither do I. But I usually know that I've seen it before. That's the difference.
Right. I don't think I've ever done that before. I don't think I've ever started watching a movie going, this is somewhat familiar. And they can see, they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen this before. I usually can remember the movies.
Yeah, me too.
Pretty much instantly.
It's rare that I won't even notice a topic, you know, the title. Someone can say, oh, have you seen this movie? And I'll be like, okay, I'll know yes or no right away. And sometimes I need to go into IMDb just to double check because it's usually a bad movie that then I have to try and remember the name of it, you know. But I usually have a general idea.
Yeah, the only other time that I have to run into like that is sometimes movies have multiple titles depending where in the world. And so if I'm talking to somebody in the UK or somewhere in a different part of around the globe, they may have had a hit movie that was named two different things or three different things depending on where it's released.
That's fair. So the conversation continues. You know, she says married and folds over the corner. And then she goes, oh, wait. And she pulls out another card from the Rolodex. And Sally just looks at her and goes, look. And then Mary goes, I got one. Sally goes, there's no point in my going out with somebody that I might really like if I met him at the right time, but who right now has no chance of being anything to me but a transitional man. Okay, but don't wait too long. Remember what happened to David Warsaw? His wife left him, and everyone said, give him some time. Don't move in too fast. 6 months later, he was dead. What are you saying? I should get married to someone right away in case he's about to die? At least you can say you were married. That was Alice's, you know, she wanted to add to the conversation. And then Marie goes, I'm saying that the right man for you might be out there right now. And if you don't grab him, somebody else will. And you'll have to spend the rest of your life knowing that someone else is married to your husband. I mean, it's.
I love that last line. I love the idea of planning in your head because you waited too long to get the guy that should be yours. Now he's with someone else, so your husband's over there, like as if it was hers to begin with. But I think that tells a lot about the writing of the character that Carrie Fisher plays. I mean, it's most normal people don't describe relationships the way she does, so it makes it very kind of telling of her kind of like how she views relationships, ironically being in one herself where she's the mistress to somebody else who she wants that husband, but he's already married to someone else.
Correct. Yeah. And it's just great the way that she does it that way, because it's from her perspective, you know, she's, you know, latching on to him so she doesn't lose him, even though he's someone else's husband right now, you know, that type of thing. Now, I find it funny that she said, you know, give him some time. Don't move in too fast. Is that what people were telling her, that she shouldn't move in too fast? So she was basically running after. She was interested in David Warsaw. And everyone said, give him some time, don't move in too fast. And apparently, that's what Marie does. It's like what she was talking about last week, where she said, oh, Joe's available. It's like she wants to pounce as soon as she can before someone else can get it. I mean, the whole thing is pretty convoluted, the type of logic that she's trying to give off here. About that it that you're gonna find out that someone else is married to your husband. You wouldn't really know.
By
Unless
the
you live
way,
in an alternative universe, and then you can see the various possibilities.
this must be a very, very long conversation, but it just seems summed up in less than a minute because, and I do this all the time, which probably drives you nuts, but if you look at 3 seconds into this minute, Carrie Fisher's watch, an analog watch, looks like it's 11:15.
That is great. It's great that you pointed out because later on it's 12:35.
And yes, within the space of when she goes back to look at her watch, it's definitely about a 35 or 40 minutes later.
It's even more. If it's 11:15, then it jumps to 12:35. That means it's 1 hour and 20 minutes later.
at 40 seconds, it looks like it's at 11:40. So it's not yet hit 12, at least at about the 40-second mark.
No, at the
So the
30-second
bit.
mark, at the 30-second mark, you can see it. It says 12:30 already. Or is that 11:30? Ah, that's 11:30.
No, it's 11. It's just before 12. So, but if you look at the
Right.
what less than 50 or less than 20 seconds earlier,
Yes.
it was it's been about 20 minutes for them to have this conversation.
Yeah. Apparently, someone wasn't doing their work here. Why? Why would it?
That's the problem.
Why would I care that
This
you
dude,
brought that
I've
up?
done this before where I've been on sets where we're filming something for either a commercial or maybe it's something creative. And for whatever reason, the person wanted a clock in the scene. I'm like, why do you want a clock in the scene? Well, I just want to make sure we show the passage of time. I'm like, you don't know that's not going to work that way. You either take the batteries out so it's always the same
Right.
time, or if it's supposed to be a certain time later, let's frame the clock at that moment. But you don't know what shot we're going to make. What if we come do a pickup shot a day later or even after a lunch break? Do we remember what time it's supposed to be from the last time we shot it? And is that the angle we?
I
It's
think
such a pain to have a clock in a
they
scene.
needed you when they were filming When Harry Met Sally and when they edited it. Because
No, nobody in the world is paying attention
that's not
to
true.
the watch
That's
face.
not true. There are crazy people like you and I that are,
My wife, I think I told you this the last time we do this. She hates when I point out either continuity errors or things like that because she's like, I can never now unsee that.
Yes.
The scene where, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where, we think Marion's dead, is one of the most famous ones where the camera pushes in. He's got the monkey. He's falling himself into a bottle of whiskey. He's super drunk. You see like an outline behind him of the bazaar outside. And then here comes a tech crew guy wearing jeans and a t-shirt on the left side of the frame, walking, didn't even know they're filming. My wife said, I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark maybe 100 times. Now I can never not see that
Well,
dude. I never once saw him.
it's like the stormtrooper hitting his head, on,
Yes.
before I saw that, you don't notice it because he's this in the second row. But once you see it, you can't unsee it.
You cannot unsee it. And I love finding little mistakes like that, but I also think it's kind of funny how you just won't look at things like that. You're so focused on like the main character of the scene who might be in the center of the screen, or you're so focused on the story, you don't pay attention to the
But that's
surrounding.
what they
And
think. But they never, when they made these movies 30, 40, 50 years ago, they didn't know that there would be crazy people like us who would be, describing a movie in depth 1 minute at a time, where we actually have the time to look at these things.
What's crazy about the time we live in now, and I don't know if you remember this, like the final season of Game of Thrones, one of the scenes they've had like Starbucks cups
Yes.
left because they had just left them on the scene. So they went back and digitally erased them. So now when you go to watch that episode, they're no longer there. You would have only seen it the first time, and then when it went over social media and everyone goes, "Did you see the Starbucks cups?" And then they go and digitally erase
Right,
them.
that's true. But yeah, I mean that's one of the problems of being able to digitally erase things. What can I tell you?
I kind of love having those little mistakes. I would hate if everybody goes back and always wants to clean up those little errors because Most people don't see it, and, right. and it doesn't ruin the movie. I think you'll go, oh, well, I'm totally out of Game of Thrones now. They got a Starbucks.
That's right. I don't remember if it was Ben-Hur or the Ten Commandments. It was one of those Bible movies from the 50s where, like, or maybe it was Spartacus. I don't even remember, where someone has like a modern
plane
watch.
Going.
You know.
Oh, a modern watch. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's stuff like that. There was a scene. I don't know. Maybe it's actually Gladiator, where you see a plane going by in the distance.
Yeah.
Like a jet.
Right.
So there are all kinds of things. Like
I think that was. I think that was Titanic that you saw, like a plane going by in the background or something like that, which also shouldn't have happened.
It may be in more than one movie.
You think? You think they have problems like that? I don't know.
I know for a fact.
Yes, I know. I know. So then the scene changes, and we can actually see a football game happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and. Do you know who is playing in this game?
Oh, yeah. I recognize from the color of just the sock
right.
when they're getting ready to hike the ball that it was the Detroit Lions because I grew up in
so
Detroit.
So did I.
And so, yep, I knew that was the classic colors of the Detroit Lions.
Yes. Now, because we can see that it's the Lions versus the Giants, okay, so, mm-hmm. so we're able to actually find out when they actually filmed this. You know, when was the real game? So the real game between the Giants and the Lions occurred on October 16th, 1988. Okay, which was a Sunday. Mm-hmm. The game started at 1 p.m. Who do you think won?
Oh, I'm going to go
That's
Giants.
That's right.
I know my Lions.
I know.
Don't bet on the Lions.
No, especially not 1988.
No.
The Lions were 1-6 after that game, and the Giants were 4-3. You know, so mm-hmm. The Giants got better, I guess, over the years, but they're nobody was in the cellar like the Lions.
No.
Yeah. And this was week 7 of the NFL season of 1988. You know, I could even tell you who got all the touchdowns and stuff like that, but it doesn't really matter. You know, but it was fun to be able to see this and say, wow, I know when they filmed this scene. And it's just great watching it. So we get a few shots of the game. It's actually pretty funny that, they actually spent the time for these 5 seconds of the shots of the players in the game just to establish where the scene is taking place.
You know what's interesting though, and I don't know if it's just my audio, it didn't sound like we were live. It sounded like we were watching a TV screen, so it actually was jarring for a second. I thought it was going to pull back and they were sitting there watching like on a television. The first time I see this, I'm thinking, oh, it sounds like TV, but then all of a sudden I realized, oh, no, we're in the stadium. It's just that's the TV audio. Because they didn't obviously have Hollywood microphones. It doesn't sound like it on the field.
Okay, that's fair. But again, for 5 seconds of footage, they didn't need to they didn't need to spend that much money getting all the sound on the field, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know?
Now, I did think it interesting. I didn't know how long the wave had been going on, but it was interesting to have, as the scene starts to end, watching everybody in the crowd start doing the wave.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, do you know where the Giants play their games?
Is it the Meadowlands?
Yes, which is also known as the Swamp. Okay, it was opened from 1976 to 2010. Okay, now one of the biggest issues that they had was both the New York Giants and the New York Jets played their games there. So it caused a lot of problems because in the early 70s, the Giants used to play in Yankee Stadium, which I didn't know that. That was really surprising to me, and then. In 1971, the Giants had made a deal with the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority in order to build them a stadium. So they left Yankee Stadium in 72. Mm-hmm. And they actually played for 1 year because of construction in New Haven, Connecticut at the Yale Bowl. And they actually only won one game of their 12 games that they played there. Then in 1975, they moved them to Shea Stadium to where the Yankees, Mets, and Jets were all playing. Think about that. They had four teams that were playing there in September, October. That just boggles the mind that they would do something like that.
Well, I think obviously sports have grown as a money-making proposition over the years, but you didn't used to see communities that wanted a separate baseball stadium, a separate football stadium. And so because the sports only had a little overlap, they would actually share. And I would always think as a kid, why do I see a baseball diamond where they're playing football? And that's because they were playing on a ball field.
Right. That's right. Now, so we talked about the fact that the Giants and Jets shared the stadium, and they actually broke a record that was held in Wrigley Field that as of in the beginning of the 2003 season, which was the 20th season that they had the Giants stadium, they had hosted 364 NFL games because of the fact that they had two different teams playing there. So basically every week they were having a game, and Wrigley, the record was 365. So and they were there for 50 seasons. So think about that, because the Bears played there for 50 seasons. So then they in the beginning of the 2003 season, they tied the records, the Giants tied the record. And then the following week, the Jets actually broke the record. So that's also a cool idea that you have two different teams that are the ones that are, tying and breaking the same record over the course of the time. They then built a new stadium called the MetLife Stadium, and they moved there in 2010. So they've been there since then. There's no longer football games play, or at least the Giants aren't playing anymore in the Meadowlands. I'm not sure if the Jets also moved. I didn't check that. Oh, sorry, the Jets did move. They both moved. So they're still both playing in the same place. So what do they do with the home field advantage if they ever play each other? I'm not enough of a football fan to know if that's even possible.
No, one is in the AFC, which is the Atlantic Football Conference, and then you've got the National Football Conference, which is the NFC.
So they never play each other.
So those are the two. Right. So not unless,
right.
Unless they were both in the Super
right,
Bowl.
Right, exactly.
Because it's the winner of the AFC takes on the winner the of NFC. The NFC right. In the Super Bowl.
Okay, I figured that. We also get to see a sign for a radio station, WNEW, which was a radio station in New York that started in 1934. And it was the call sign represented from Newark.
Okay. Yes,
it was basically that is the radio station that's the voice of New York sports, because it covers the Giants football games, the Rangers hockey games, and the Knicks basketball games. So, I like the fact that they just have, it's real, obviously. So they have the real, we can see the whole thing with WNEW on the side.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script and a few other things?
Well, one of the things, since my first chance talking about just in general the main characters, and we get to meet, for me, Meg Ryan for my first time. She has never looked better than in this scene to me with Carrie talking about trying to get back on the dating wagon. I don't know what it is. It's the kind of the tousled hair. It's that late 80s, not quite as poofy. You were starting to move into the 90s look, but her eyes, her makeup, everything. I mean, this is what made Meg Ryan like the girl next door, but just cute as a button, and it just looks amazing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. This is the movie that put her on the map. She was in other movies beforehand, but this is the one that, this is her first lead role.
I will tell you this too, and I know we're going to get to it at the end, but a lot of people consider this one of her best overall films. Now, I don't know if it's the best performance, but when you rank all of the movies she's in, this one's usually at the top.
Okay. Well, we'll get there later today. you're jumping the gun there a little bit
top I just five. Meant not me personally. I'm talking about like when you look at the IMDb ratings or the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, so many people consider this one of the best movies that Meg Ryan happens to be.
Right. Okay.
Like just as a movie.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so the script, again, this is a version of the script from August 23rd, 1988, which I guess is, was it a month and a half or almost 2 months before the football game that we just talked about. So there aren't that many changes in this particular minute, but one of the things I like is the descriptive nature of the script itself. So it says, you know, when she goes, really, married? And it says, Marie takes Ken Darman's Rolodex card and dog ears a corner of it and places it in the section at the back of the box. Then she pulls out another card. So, I mean, this is even in the script. This isn't something that Carrie Fisher decided to ad lib the way that she's doing it. She's doing it exactly as Nora Ephron directed her to do so, based on, you know, what was written in the script. So I just find that amazing how it translates so well. You know, that you can have a, you know, a three sentence line in a script, and then have the actor who's being directed by the director and following the script, and do it in such a way that you know, reading it off the paper and seeing it on the screen is exactly the same.
You know, that's something interesting. I always, because I've taken some script writing classes, and then you hear other people talk about writing scripts, and generally speaking, they say young fledgling writers, they make the mistake of putting too much description. Let the director decide. Let the actor decide. But then you do stuff like you look at older scripts like this movie, or one that I did with our collective Movies by Minutes group, Silverado, where it's written almost like the shot list.
Yes.
Like this is exactly how the writer saw every single moment, including what was in the background. What kind of field was it? What kind of time of day was it? I mean, just so much detail.
Yep. And it works because of that. And the only other difference is that in the script, they are in Shea Stadium. So, you know, maybe, I mean, I doubt it. It's, since it's not taking place in 75, so they're not at a football game. I guess they're supposed to be at a baseball game. But, you know, I like the fact after doing the research that I saw, you know, that the Giants there was this one season where they played in Shea Stadium, and the script says, okay, they're at a baseball game. I mean, it doesn't make a difference if they're at a baseball or a football game or whatever it is. I mean, we'll talk about that tomorrow, that, you know, it doesn't matter what type of sporting event they're at. You know, that's not the issue.
I will tell you, had they chosen to do a baseball game, which we can talk more tomorrow, but had they chosen a baseball game versus football, I don't know that it would have been as funny because of all of the movement.
Correct.
Football games tend to be much more kinetic. There's a lot more action. It's not in stop, where baseball, there's a lot of slowdowns. There's time between pitches. If there's a pitching duel going on, not a lot happening in the crowd.
I got to tell you, football games also have a lot of dead time. You know,
not as much as baseball.
I don't know. Every time you're switching between the offense and the defense and stuff like that.
Oh, well, like when you take a commercial timeout and things like that. Yeah. But I'm talking about in general, it feels like there's much more kinetic energy in the stands for football versus baseball.
Okay.
Baseball tends to be more relaxed. You kind of can chill. You grab a beer. You're having a conversation. Football, you got to like pay attention and focus and yell and cheer.
Right. Okay. That's fair. I'll give you that one.
At least
I'll
my give you experience. That one. That's when I go.
I don't know. I rarely go to sporting events because I find them just really boring. You know, just sitting there watching them. You know, I like watching the highlights because then you, as you said, it's, things are flowing much more. You know, you can see exactly what's going on. But to each his own, you know.
Right.
All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So, Alan, what have you got for us? Start with number five and work your way up.
All right. Number five, working backwards to number one, Joe versus the Volcano. Loved that movie when I first saw it. Didn't really quite understand what I was watching the first time. And then the second time I was like, okay, this is a great allegory of life. I thought it was just really, really cool. And then the reuse of the zigzag of the volcano, the lava and the symbols, thought that was a really cool flick. Number four, Inner Space, with Dennis Quaid, who would be hooked up with her for several flicks, but you know, is what it is. For me,
too bad. Number Dennis three, Quaid wasn't supposed to be in Proof of Life. Things wouldn't have changed. Things might have stayed different.
For me, number three was The Doors. But I also have a thing for Val Kilmer in that role, and I was a big Doors fan when it came out, so I watched that movie over and over and over and over again. So thought that was cool. You've Got Mail, number two. And then my number one, I'm assuming we can't use When Harry
Met
Sally.
Of course you can.
My number one in terms of performance.
Just like with Alan Rickman when we did last season and before, you know.
But for me, performance wise, it's a split, and I'm gonna reserve the right to split between When a Man Loves a Woman and Courage Under Fire, because those were very different kind of Meg Ryan yes. roles. She was trying to break out of the typical cutesy girl next door rom com. Much more serious and much heavier.
Okay, well, you
and
can't
so I thought
split.
Those were
you
nice
pick.
Stretches.
You gotta so you can bump things down now if you want. You know, because I'm gonna tally it up later. I can't give 5 points to each of them. I gotta give one of them 5 points.
All right, I'm gonna say that in terms of Academy Award level performance, I'm gonna go with When a Man Loves a Woman. And so let's bump Joe versus the Volcano to honorable mention. And we'll put Courage Under Fire as number two. So they would all bump down.
Right. Okay. That's fair. I love Courage Under Fire. I think it's an amazing – I think it is just such an amazing story, the way that they tell it also.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, it's very good. And I remember when it came out, the big controversy, obviously, with women in combat. Yes. And the discussion always about, well, where do you draw the line? Where should women – should they be on the front line? Should they be, in the foxholes? And it's an interesting concept because I remember being in the military right around that time. I was in the Navy in the early 90s and during Gulf War I. And women tended to be more in logistics and support roles. They were close to the front line, but there was the discussion, how close to the line do you put it? And then here comes this movie, Courage Under Fire, and it makes a pretty compelling argument that if you're capable of doing the job, what does it matter if you're a man or a woman?
That's correct. I agree with you on that one. But that's one of the things that the movie discusses, whether her character was capable of her job or not. And it depends on right. who you ask, which is one of the greatest things about that movie, the way that it gives us so many different perspectives on the same exact event. And trying to figure that out.
And there's nothing wrong with having Denzel Washington as the lead male.
Of course not. Of course not.
I think he's an astonishing actor. I don't know that there's been a single movie where I haven't watched Denzel and said, well, even if the movie's not holding together, he's doing an amazing job. I've never seen Denzel Washington phone it in.
Okay. That is definitely very fair. All right. So, Alan, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with Alan Sanders?
Okay, so we've done a couple of Movies by Minutes with my buddy Walt Murray called The Wilder Ride, where we broke down movies by Gene Wilder. We did Young Frankenstein Season 1. We did Blazing Saddles Season 2. Then we changed the format to be more talk show-oriented for Seasons 3 and 4. Then my co-host not only went through a divorce, but then decided he found love again, and so he's been on the last year honeymoon. So we've been on a very long, and I don't know how much longer, hiatus, but that's where that show is. I also do another show with my wife, which is, I think, more in tune with maybe the audience of this
crowd,
called the Marriage Fit Podcast, where it's two a wife and a husband from previous marriages working on a blended family. So it's we call it the Marriage Fit because it's about trying to figure out how to make things fit, how to stay fit, and not throw a fit.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go review and subscribe on any podcast you might be using on to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. Alan, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
Absolutely. Got to continue on. Got to find out what's going to go on at the football game.
All right. Or baseball game, depending on if you're going to the script.
Depending on whether it's the script or the movie, I'll stick with the movie.
For sure. The visual works much better than on the paper, for sure. Hey, everyone, this is Rob. I just wanted to add an addendum to this episode. A fan of the show, Blake Riley, who is a huge Giants and Jets fan and is also another MXMer like us. I mean, he's done Clerks Minute. He's done the Mighty Ducks Minute. He's done a bunch of others. So he happened to point out to me that apparently my research on this episode wasn't as concise as I had hoped it was. Because I'm not a football fan, but apparently he is a massive football fan, and he decided to bring up certain points that I got wrong on today's episode. So I just wanted to just quickly point out the correct information. So first of all, thank you very much, Blake, for getting in touch with me, for letting me know that I did make some mistakes. It happens. We're all human. We all make mistakes, especially in fields which we are less experts in and stuff like that. So his first comment is that the Giants and the Jets both play at MetLife Field, and it's still located in the Meadowlands, and it's actually right across the street from Giants Stadium where they used to play. The stadium was actually torn down, and it is now a huge mall, which is called the American Dream Mall. I was actually there this past summer, and as someone who's not a fan of football, didn't really make a difference to me, but thank you for pointing that out. The Giants and Jets actually play each other every preseason, and they have a game that's known as the Snoopy Bowl because, you know, the connection of the peanuts to MetLife. They also, every 3 years or so, they have a regular season game between the two of them because they do have games between the NFC East and the AFC East. And they rotate, you know, through each time as to who is considered the home team. WNEW. In the 80s, it wasn't a sports station. It was actually just a rock station that ended up turning into a classic rock station, which in the late 90s, early 2000s, it actually became a talk radio station. Again, thank you for that, Blake. Another thing is that WFAN is the major sports station in New York City, and it was the first 24/7 sports station in the U.S., and it currently has the number one talk show in New York City, Carton and Roberts. So once again, thank you very much, Blake, for pointing these things out. I have no problem being corrected on things. And as you could all see from everyone who's listening here, I also don't have a problem adding an addendum to the episode explaining things. So I thank Blake for reaching out. And anyone else out there, if you have comments or things that think I got wrong, got right, feel free to, you know, send me a message either by Facebook, by Twitter, or via my website itself. All right, so until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill with all your faults. I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.